Welcome to We've Got Issues. I'm Joshua Holland. This week, we're going to speak with Heather Digby Parton because there is nobody that I would prefer to process the election results with than Heather Digby Parton. First, as always, I'm joined by alternate managing editor Elizabeth Preza. Liz, how are you?
How are you? I'm great.
I'm feeling good, too. I'm feeling good. And today is the first day that I'm really feeling good.
Great. That's awesome. I started feeling better yesterday.
I was feeling better yesterday, but today I'm feeling good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
What did you do on election night, may I ask?
I went through the whole litany of emotions as I tried to process what everybody knew was going to happen. It was like I was one of those people that got amnesia. You know, I study all this and I felt pretty informed going in about what the process is going to look like playing out. And then at 10 o'clock at night on election night, I got kind of caught up in the whole oh shit. This is not turning out the way people expected it to. And then I remembered that I knew this was going to happen.
You know, it is really remarkable. We spoke for months and months and months about how there would be this red mirage and then things would shift to the blue afterwards. We knew that the mail-in ballots were heavily Democratic. We knew that day of voting was going to be heavily Republican and was going to look really good for Donald Trump. Then it was going to shift. Did I hallucinate reading 50,000 articles about that?
Because
as soon as things started looking bad, I'm looking at Twitter and everybody's like, oh my God, it's 2016 again.
Yeah, they were done. They were done with it.
I mean, people were literally pulling their hair out.
They're ready to call it for Trump at like 10 p.m. Like really smart people who knew what they were talking about.
That, you know what? That New York Times needle is fucking pernicious.
Yeah, it's true.
I was like, I can't believe you people are looking at that needle again. Like, how much punishment are you in for?
Seriously,
just gluttons for abuse.
I'm just gonna tell the story real quick because I think I also had this like personal experience that made me think like, oh shit, maybe there are all of these silent Trump voters, because I was talking to a friend of a friend in Colorado who's a doctor, and we began talking and he told me that he like held his nose and voted for Joe Biden. Okay, great. You know, like so many people, I understand that. And then as we're like talking, some of the things that he was saying weren't really jiving with the idea that he voted for Joe Biden. Like he started talking about how much respect he has for Ben Shapiro and Ted Cruz. And I was like, wait a second, sir.
I mean, even Ted Cruz's dog doesn't have any respect for Ted Cruz. Did he say all lives matter?
No, he didn't say all lives matter, but he did. He was talking about how doctors don't make enough money and how Joe Biden's tax plan would really be a burden for doctors. And then at the end of our conversation, he admitted that he was a 2016 Gary Johnson voter. And in 2020, he actually voted for Donald Trump.
Okay, so he's a schmuck. He's a, a wingnut doctor schmuck. There's like, a lot of them.
I was like, I didn't realize people like you existed, but I'm glad to know this going into the election. So I think maybe I had kind of a feeling that things were going to play out a little bit differently than, you know, a huge Biden landslide.
Yeah,
that everyone hoped for.
Yeah, I mean, look, we hoped for the landslide. I must say, I said this on Twitter, you know, there's sometimes movies come out and they're so hyped up and you finally get to go see the movie and you're like, ah, that sucked. But that same movie, if you went and saw it without expectations, you'd be like, that's a pretty good flick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all those maps circulating on social media with like Biden 407 electoral
winning
college
votes. Texas and Florida.
Like, I mean, we spent weeks debating whether we should add how many Supreme Court seats we should add, how many states we should add. You know, like it was we got a little out of control.
Let's
admit it. We got a little out of control. And I am looking. We're recording this midday on Thursday. Results are still coming in. I'm looking at an election. You know, Nate Silver estimates that at the end, Biden will win the popular vote by around 7 million.
That's incredible.
Biden is on track to possibly, if everything falls his way, end up with 321 electoral college votes. Now, that's not the likeliest scenario. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we're talking flipping Arizona and possibly, very possibly, Georgia.
That's, you know, amazing.
Arizona has gone for Democrats in one election since 1952. They picked up you know, two Senate seats. Obviously, we're disappointed about Susan Collins holding on in Maine, but the Senate is still in play. It's going to be a tough road, but the Senate is not a done deal.
Yeah, it's looking like it's going to go into two races in Georgia in a runoff at this point.
Yeah. So, I mean, I spent the morning on Wednesday just talking down friends and family off the ledge. You know, on election night, I made a huge error. I booked a half hour to talk about the election, to do punditry, basically, on public radio in San Francisco. And I forgot that I am the type of person who likes to process things a little bit and know what I'm talking about. And I realized a few minutes before I got on this show, I was like, wait a second, I have no idea how this is going to turn out. What the fuck am I going to say? And definitely was not my best media hit ever. I mean, I made a couple of, decent pundity points, but there was a lot. She was the host, Rose Aguilar, who's excellent. A few times she was like, well, how is this going to work out? And I was like, I don't know, Rose. It's 10:30 at night. Like, we have tens of millions of mail-in ballots that they're not even starting counting tomorrow. Right. How the fuck should I know what's going to happen? So I got to remember that I'm not a good pundit.
Yeah, it does. I will say it does.
I'm more of an analyst. I need to look at things.
Yeah, I understand. I will say it doesn't look so good for Democrats in state races, which I think, like, if the party is being smart, we kind of need to get in the ground game better.
Yeah. Yeah.
On a state level.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of where all of these crazy election laws that even allowed for this red mirage to appear is that it all comes from state legislators and board of elections.
That's right. They did poorly in state legislative races. I believe Republicans picked up two or maybe three trifectas. That is the control Democrats, I believe, may have picked up one. I think there were still races outstanding, but it was not good for down ballot races. They also lost some House seats. I haven't looked at those seats yet to see if they were, you know, after a wave election in 2018, and maybe some of those, I do know that at least some of those were low hanging fruit, reddish districts. But I mean, I really want to see a normal election before I decide that this or that is broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Democrats didn't have a ground game because of the pandemic. I mean, they took that
seriously.
They took it seriously, right? They didn't want to, like, spread COVID-19 around with their literature.
Voter, right?
Yeah, I mean, and even with the polls, like, the polls were very, very far off, especially, you know, it may be that the national polls aren't that far off, but the state and district polls were a complete mess.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of navel gazing by the data guys, by all the nerds, the numbers nerds are like, oh, what did we get wrong? But, you know, Michael McDonald says that turnout is on pace to be we are on pace to have the highest turnout for 120 years.
Incredible.
120 years. And, you know, I'm a quasi polling expert. Like, I pay attention. I understand polling. I got 3 A's in 3 different statistics classes in college.
Humble brag.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not Nate Silver or anything, but the most obvious thing is that they model turnout and they have these likely voter screens. They try to figure out who's going to come out and vote. And they model a low turnout election and a high turnout election. And I don't know, did they model the highest turnout for 120 years? I don't know.
Right.
That it may be very simple. So before I declare that everything, or before I conclude that everything is, you know, who am I to declare? Before I conclude that everything is fucked, I just want to see a normal election in a, you know, in a non-pandemic, you know, maybe without a carnival barker, a fascist carnival barker.
Well,
it might be that we just weren't, it may just be that all these institutions weren't really prepared for the specifics of 2020, which is a crazy year, and which, for all we know, may end up with a planet-destroying meteor before it's all over.
Yeah, or maybe they failed to pick up the pulse on the Gary Johnson Trump
voters. Gary Johnson to Trump voters. What about them? What about them?
I was like, you voted for Gary Johnson in 2016.
What a loser. What a fucking loser.
Like, do you know where Aleppo is? So crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. All right. Yeah. Well, let's move on with the show, because I'm going to keep talking about the election. There's nothing really else to talk about with Digby. So why doesn't everybody stay tuned? We'll take a quick break and come right back. Welcome back. I'm still Joshua Holland, and I'm joined now by Heather Digby Parton. Heather is a columnist at Salon, and of course she writes at her own place, Hullabaloo. Hi, Heather. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing well, which is an odd feeling. I'm not accustomed to it. I was saying during the introduction that there was really nobody that I wanted to process everything with more than you.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate processing with you too.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling relieved, still a little shell-shocked, but, you know, I'm feeling much more relaxed than I was 48 hours ago, I'll tell you that much.
I am, too. As we speak, and we're recording this Thursday afternoon, by the time you listen to it at home, things may have shifted. Donald Trump may have started a nuclear war with Canada. I don't know, but as of this moment, it looks like Joe Biden is looking extremely good in Georgia and Arizona, and is on pace for perhaps 306 electoral college votes. And if he squeaks out North Carolina, maybe 321, huge popular vote lead. And the Senate is still in play. And I think that, you know, if you had told me that this would be the outcome in January or February or 3 weeks ago, I'd be thrilled. But people were pretty depressed.
Well, I think part of this was, I mean, and I wrote about this on Salon this week, is that, you know, it's the same syndrome that we had in 2016 and even to some extent in 2018, which also had a long count. I don't think people remember this, but on the night of the 2018 election, which was a very successful election for Democrats, you know, people were in despair. I was doing a show with someone else, and they were going, you know, well, this is it, you know, we're doomed, and so, and it over the course of several days, as the counts came in, and in some of the states that take a long time to count, California being one of them, more and more races were flipped to the point where they thought maybe they'd picked up, you know, 26, 27 seats, and it ended up being 40, which was huge.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, but this goes back to 2016, because this it's a mindset that we have in our bubble, which I would argue is the, you know, the bubble that is real, that is the actual real, you know, news and information bubble. We still just can't believe emotionally that this many people would vote for Donald Trump. It is very hard to wrap your mind around the fact that anybody would vote for him. It was bad in 2016, but after 4 years, I think we really expected that this was going to be, that you were going to see a real shift. And that didn't happen. There's a huge turnout and tons more people voted on both sides. And of course, what that adds up to is more people, you know, more Biden voters than Trump voters overall. I mean, the popular vote margin is going to be huge. Biden's going to be well over 50%, and it could be as much as, you know, 5 or 6 million votes. We don't know yet. There's a lot of votes to still be counted.
Nate Silver projected 7 million votes. So, you like, know, that's a big, yeah, big margin.
It's a huge margin. And what it says is, what that absolutely says is that we're right. That, of course, Donald Trump was repudiated by a huge number of Americans, but because of our system, if he could maintain his base, which he's done everything to do, in enough of these electoral college states, he could keep it close, potentially win. And it doesn't look like he, at this point, managed to do that. The blue wall up there in the Midwest that he took last time, as well as a state like Georgia, which I never would have expected would be close.
No.
And Arizona, which they were hoping for, but I don't think the Biden campaign ever thought that was necessarily going to fall in their column. You know, these are things that we didn't expect. But, you know, because we were all thinking, oh, my God, you know, the whole country is going to turn on Trump. Won't that be great? We'll be popping champagne on election night. That didn't happen. So where there was the usual kind of, oh, here we go again. This is, you know, this is awful. And, you know, I try to keep my perspective on that. And especially this time with what we knew about this, you know, mail-in ballot being Democratic and the day of ballot being Republican, and that there was going to be this blue mirage and a red mirage. And also we were all warned. Everybody told us. We knew that was going to happen. We knew that the Democratic votes were very likely to come in late. And yet we still had that. So I think, you know, this has been very traumatic for us for the last 4 years. And here we are sitting here again, I think having gone through trauma, but as you said in the beginning, and I agree with you now, I'm starting to feel, all right, the world is starting to fall back onto its normal axis a little bit, and I can sort of process it. Intellectually, I knew, but emotionally, it was very hard because I think I was just, you know, we all have, as the cliche goes, we have PTSD from 2016. So we're just trying to get through the day and hope that we can kind of come back to sort of a normal state. And you're absolutely right. If we had seen these results on election night, if this was last Tuesday night and it was, say, 10 o'clock at night, it was this close in these states, and we were just waiting for votes to come in, we would have been ecstatic, because nobody expected it to be that good, really, like you say, 3 weeks ago.
One of the reasons that that Republicans in state after state blocked efforts to take time to pre-process votes. They wanted this. And this was Trump's strategy from the beginning, discourage his own party from voting via mail, delegitimize mail-in votes, hope for a election night victory, claim victory. And I must say that I think that you know, they projected their punch too much, because if you look, there were reports that earlier returned mail-in ballots were more Democratic than those coming in later. There was a report in the New York Times about how election officials were surprised by the low rate of spoilage, of errors of absentee ballots. And why was this? If you remember back to the Democratic National Convention, they spent an enormous amount of time talking about the mechanics of voting. And, you know, when the naked ballot, the so-called naked ballot issue came up in Pennsylvania, that is to say that naked ballots are the ballots that weren't enclosed in a security envelope, inside an envelope, another attempt by Republicans to spoiled Democratic leaning ballots. When that came up, there was a PSA done by a bunch of celebrities. They got naked to show the naked ballot, et cetera, et cetera. So they projected too much the plan. It was too clumsy, and there were preparations against it. But I also think, Democrats and liberals were there's something psychological. We're like beaten dogs. We expect, we see the hand, we expect it to hurt. And I look at the other side, you know, Republicans are, they always think they're winning if they're not being cheated. And they have this whole kind of narrative that it's a center-right nation. We have internalized this idea that we're, you know, detached from real Americans, we're coastal elites, whatever. So I think there's a tendency for us to mope and to be negative. I think that if the shoe were on the other foot, I mean, they would be cheering and gloating and, you know, out in the streets partying, you know. And I think also getting back to the idea that you mentioned that, you know, it's hard for us to understand how 45% of the country can support this guy. It really, and this is the, you know, the right now, this country is being ripped apart by the fact that we have two very different realities. We no longer have this shared sense of factual reality, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the conservative media, I mean, let me put it this way. Right now, there's a lot of punditry about how, you know, this election was a repudiation of not only Trumpism but progressives and the left, because Joe Biden was the nominee. He's a centrist, or moderate, whatever. And, you know, I think that the reality that we have to face, whether you're a leftist or a moderate or center left, whatever, is this conservative disinformation network and the effect that that has. You know, tens of millions of Americans, like mostly white Americans, they believed that Trump has done a very good job managing the pandemic. And they also believe that, like, Antifa are burning down American cities on behalf of the Democratic Party, that the mainstream Democrats advocate, like, Venezuela-style socialism, not European-style, but, like, Venezuela-style. And they have this idea of abortion on demand until moments before birth, the repeal of the Second Amendment, all this stuff, abolish Christmas, all of this stuff. And I don't know what the answer is, but it seems to me that the finger pointing that we're seeing now, you know, people on the left are blaming the establishment for, you know, disappointing down ballot races, not taking the Senate as many of us hoped. The left is, and vice versa. But this is the real problem. And then during elections, there's just this absolute gusher of outrageous lies, and they're sending out doctored pics and doctored videos, and the fact checkers can't even keep up with it.
Well, you're absolutely right. I don't think there's any other. I mean, this is the overarching problem. I mean, there are a lot of things that are going on in our culture, and, you know, there are differences, cultural differences, tribal differences, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, yeah.
But the big divide is this information divide. People are living in, you know, and the right-wing media, and I'm going to defend this because I absolutely think it's true. I mean, I'm not saying I don't live in a bubble. I spend a lot of time in my own little, you know, Twitter stream, and I you know, read a lot of left-wing stuff, and I'm, you know, my friends are where I have. I live in Santa Monica, California. So I don't deny that I have a bubble, but I am not living in a world of lies and outright disinformation and propaganda. That is not me. I even, you know, venture out of my bubble to go check out that the other side and to see what they have to say. And I pay attention to it. And I'm telling you, and I know that this is true, that they are being inundated with falsehoods, with misinformation, disinformation, whichever. And it has brought them into a place. I mean, look, there is a vibrant and rather substantial subculture in the Republican Party that believes in QAnon. I mean, this is not, you know, I mean, it's not just a little fringy thing that's going on. This is actually permeated into, I mean, I'm not saying it's all of them, of course, it isn't, but it's substantial. It's, you know, millions of people. And that is the most absurd, bizarre, you know, it might as well be, you know, a cult. It might as well be, you know, some, you know, Baba Ram Dash kind of thing that they're falling into there with that, with that particular conspiracy theory. And, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we're seeing that they're getting, and they get it, and it floats into their mainstream, what they think of as their mainstream news, which is Fox and talk radio and the rest of it. And of course, during the Trump era, we've seen this absolutely amplified by the president of the United States, which, you know, they have always done that to some extent, but it was subtler and there was a lot more nuance to it. Now, it is, you know, he's just blasted it out as if it was real to all of his followers. And because of that, I think I'm a little less surprised that he got a huge turnout. I mean, I think that on the Trump side, it has been a massive kind of, I hesitate to use the word cult all the time, but movement, I don't know, whatever. It's maybe just a party. You know, I mean, as you know, like a fun party, not a political party, that, you know, there has been this kind of tribal joy among Trump voters in that they've had this kind of craziness sort of reflected back on them from their media, from the president. I mean, all of this, I mean, it has made them feel as if this was something very, very big, and they've wanted to be part of it. You just look at those Trump rallies and the people who go, and I know that most voters don't go to Trump rallies, but I think that they are fairly representative of Trump's most, vociferous fans. That, you know, look, they dress up in all this gear. They spend all kinds of money on this stuff. They travel far and wide. They're like deadheads, you know. I mean, they it's about the party, about being around each other as much as it is around being being around Trump or being in his presence.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that there is that if there's a cultural thing that's happening there, it's fed by this media, which has sort of created this atmosphere of excitement and stimulation. And of course, we felt it too, but it's been largely in a negative sense, right? I mean, oh my God, can you believe what he's doing? Look at what he's saying. Look what's happening to our country. Where for them, this has been largely a really positive, exciting, fun experience for them to have Trump in office. So, you know, I'm not really surprised. But just to go back to just one little thing that you said earlier, which I just think it's important to reiterate. When you said that the Democrats had educated their voters about the early ballots, I saw just today, now this is Thursday when we're recording this, that the Secretary of State of Pennsylvania, which is the center of the legal case that Trump was planning to bring about late arriving ballots, because that was the place where they had the legal case that said that because it was the Secretary of State and the state Supreme Court that had decided you could count ballots that arrived after Election Day, that it was invalid, that it constitutionally it had to be
the legislature.
Now, the Supreme Court kind of punted on that and said it was, you know, we're not going to interfere this close to the election. But it was left wide open with the assumption that Amy Coney Barrett would join the case and that she would rule in favor of Donald Trump and the Republicans on that and say that they had to invalidate all those ballots that came in after Election Day. And so even the Secretary of State in Pennsylvania set all those aside and said, okay, well, we're going to count them, but we'll keep them separate in case something happens and we have to know which votes those were. She said this morning, this is Thursday morning, that there were very few. They didn't get very many ballots in afterwards. So people got that message. And again, it was Trump and his big mouth that went out there over and over and over again, really for months, saying they're rigging it, their mail-in ballots are fraudulent, blah, blah, blah. And they ended up making Democrats very careful about filling out their ballots. And they got them in early. They got them in early. So that case may not, I mean, the courts aren't going to take that case unless the number of votes there could overturn the results, right? I mean, that's just not going to happen. Even these people, what would be the point? I mean, and even if they do take it and they overturn them, if it doesn't flip the election, who cares? But, you know,
well, it's a radical legal theory.
Totally, I mean, radical.
And the courts generally, the Republicans on judges have been extremely activist in suppressing the vote. I mean, we're seeing a minor landslide, at least, developing, and we have to keep in mind that it was in the face of relentless voter suppression, the most relentless that we've ever seen. You know, you make that point about his fans. It seems to me that the story of the 2020 election is fairly simple. Trump animates both sides, and the Democratic coalition is a little bit bigger, which we already knew about. We knew that non-voters, the universe of non-voters, were tended to have more liberal views on government spending, on the role of government in the economy, et cetera, has tended to skew towards Democrats. That's long been the case. We know that they also skewed more towards Democrats in terms of their demographics. So this guy comes along, he's a disruptive force, and everybody is like, okay, we're turning everything up to 11. His people do, our people do, and looks like, again, there's more of us. Let me ask you how you think that might play out. Looks like we have the Senate is still in play, technically. Not technically. The Senate is still in play. Democrats can win the Senate. We have two Georgia Senate races going to a runoff in January. Donald Trump will still be president. He will not be on the ballot. I think it's a safe assumption that he will still be lobbing hand grenades, right? And making and throwing temper tantrums. So Trump is not on the ballot. You can't go vote for him, but he's energizing the other side because he's still the president and he's still a lunatic, you know, demonizing whatever he's demonizing, trashing, you know, Democrats, whatever. If they manage to pull out Georgia, or even if they don't manage to pull out Georgia, but it's razor close. I'm thinking Georgia looks good, but right now, I mean, is there a little drop off among disappointed Trump supporters, or do they come out in numbers to, you know, balance out a Biden presidency? These are low information people. They're not necessarily regular voters. Some Trump voters, that the people who he gets out, who other Republicans don't turn out, do those people maybe drop off?
I don't know. You know, I mean, you're looking at the Georgia race. I don't think anybody expected Georgia to be a state that Biden would win. And I don't think people were putting a whole lot of stock in the idea that these two Senate races would end up in the runoff. I mean, everybody was hopeful, but yeah, there were other states that people thought were much more likely to go. So something's happened in Georgia. I think maybe part of what's happened in Georgia is a woman by the name of Stacey Abrams, who had a get out the vote operation that is monstrous there. And I think that that's probably what has made the difference. You know, it's razor thin, the whatever the win for the Democrats is. So I don't think that's going to go away. And if anybody's going to be donating to anybody, I would donate to her group over anybody else as far as these two races in January are concerned. But, you know, it's kind of funny.
Heather, let me just interrupt you. The group is called Fair Fight.
Right.
And you can find it on Act Blue. I donated to Fair Fight this morning when we found that the Purdue Ossoff race was going to be the second one. If you want to dig into the couch cushions and donate to these races, this is a nonpartisan show, but if you want, you know, John Ossoff is one of the Democrats. Warnick is the other. Reverend Warnick. What is his first name?
What is his first? I can't think of it.
Let's just say Reverend Warnick.
Reverend Warnick. That's what I'm thinking of him as. Yeah.
Everybody calls him Reverend Warnick. So maybe that is his first name. Maybe it's his occupation and his first name. Who knows? And Fair Fight is the organization. And that's going to be probably the most expensive runoff election in the history of runoff elections. There's going to be a lot of activism. And you know, if you're young and you don't have a lot of attachments, maybe go move to Georgia for a while. Sorry.
Exactly.
Go on, Heather. I'm sorry.
No, this is so important.
It's so important because, look, it's going to be a fucking disaster if, as seems still likely, Mitch McConnell is running Senate and Democrats have the White House. And if they can get the Senate, that would be the blowout. That would be the thorough repudiation of Trump. Absolutely. That everybody's looking for.
Well, we don't know if that's going to happen. It's theoretically possible. It's also possible. There's a Senate race in Alaska that hasn't been called yet either. They've still got half the state hasn't been
half
counted.
Half the state, yeah.
So, you know,
that one is making me crazy, actually.
Yeah, I know.
They've been stuck at half because they don't start counting absentee ballots. I don't know why. Alaska's a weird state.
It is a weird state.
So they start counting on November 10th. I assume it's because they need to give them time to send in their ballots via like dog sled.
Well, kind of. I mean, I'm sure that the law was put into place to account for the villages out in
remote communities.
Yeah. And so I assume that that's what it is. I went to high school in Alaska, so I'm kind of familiar. And I have a good friend who's actually waiting for who is Alaska state legislator who's waiting for the mail-in votes to come in because he's behind 500 votes. So, you know, that state is very much up in the air. But they have the same dynamic that we had here everywhere else, which was that it was mostly Democrats who voted by mail. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But that just wanted to put that out. That is another state that hasn't been decided.
That's really
interesting. And, you know, and it's theoretically even possible that North Carolina, that state, unlikely, but you never know. They don't know how many of their votes are outstanding, and they've got a while to go before they will declare, before they will stop counting in North Carolina.
Well, they have a sorry to keep talking over
you. No, that's okay.
Election information. So their deadline is November 12th. So right. they count ballots that they receive for another whatever week.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we don't know exactly.
They get a lot of military ballots there. There are a lot of military families that are stationed there with, you know, their spouses overseas. So, you know, who knows which way that's going to go, if it changes substantially or not. But just, you know, there are some races that are still out there. But the two in Georgia are the ones that everybody's going to be looking at, because there will be another election. And that sort of says, you know, okay, we've got another shot at this. And obviously they were very close, because they wouldn't be going to a runoff if they weren't. So, you know, there's that. But I also just want to bring something else up about, you know, we heard this thing this morning about Mitch McConnell saying that he's going to decide who Joe Biden's cabinet's going to be, and he's not going to let Joe Biden have any liberals in his cabinet, and he's going to be the one, you know, Mitch McConnell playing his game already.
Jesus, yeah.
And so we know that about him. But I want to just sort of remind people that when the Democrats do have a majority, it has been the case always in the past, and I see no reason to think that it's all that would be all that different in the future. Because of the way the Senate is, you know, apportioned, and because it is an undemocratic institution, exactly like the Electoral College, in which way more cows and rocks in red states get representation than people, much less the District of Columbia, but people right. who live in New York or California, you know, we are underrepresented by population in the U.S. Senate. So there's always this red state skew, or I should say just conservative rural state skew. And when a Democrat wins in one of those states, they always, always end up being a sort of centristy, you know, it's a rare
pain in the ass. They become a pain in the ass.
Excuse me, but that's exactly what they are. You know, and I'm going back to Obamacare, right? I mean, Obama had a gigantic mandate in 2008. He had a 60-vote majority in the Senate, and they could barely get Obamacare through because people like Joe Lieberman, and you had the Cornhusker compromise, and you had Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas. Cornhusker was Nebraska. They had the Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas, and they're all just pains in the asses because they're the Susan Collinses of the Democratic Party. So I just wanted to remind people of that, because, you know, we think that it was going to be sort of an easy, you know, play for the Democrats, just come in and do these massive reforms. And it was not going to be that difficult to do. It was always going to be that difficult to do because of the way the Senate is, you know, the institution itself is made up. It's always that way. I mean, I'm for abolishing the Senate myself. I'd prefer to abolish it right along with the filibuster. Let's just dump it completely.
Dump the whole thing.
Undemocratic. But that we would have been facing issues like that, regardless of whether, you know, we won or lost. Now, Mitch McConnell, of course, is a blight on humanity all himself. And him being in charge means that a lot of stuff doesn't come to the floor. A lot of things that maybe we could have passed with a Democratic Senate under, you know, with Chuck Schumer being the majority leader. I'm not in any way saying that isn't important. Being able to organize the Senate is a huge thing. And of course, we should want it regardless. But I just wanted to remind people, it's not always that easy to get big things done, even with a Democratic majority, as we saw with Obamacare and the first stimulus. Which was, you know, that they wanted a much bigger one. They couldn't get it done because of a bunch of Democrats standing in their way.
Yeah, so, no. There was a pain in the ass caucus, a significant pain in the ass caucus in that 60-seat Democratic Senate. But, you know, with McConnell saying that he won't allow progressives to be confirmed, I think, you know, we just lived through 4 years of Trump. I say make Medea Benjamin the acting Secretary of Defense, you know, just put all secret acting, just make them acting. It's fine. Make them the officials serving in the capacity of. Right, like
they, I mean, we just, yeah. just, I mean, if I hereby declare
I mean, if Chad Wolf. If Chad Wolf could be running the Department of Homeland Security, there's no reason, or ICE, whatever he is, he's the official acting as the head of
Department of Homeland Security, I think.
Yeah. And but his confirmation was completely illegal, and that there was, you know, a whole thing about it, and they made him the acting head. And then when there was a lot of media attention, he kind of changed it to the official serving as the acting head. So listen, fuck Mitch McConnell. They need to play a little bit of hardball. But I want to go back a little bit to and we're skipping around a little bit, but you know, I want to focus on the election. So right now we have all these Trumpers making trouble incoherently outside of ballot processing centers in Michigan, where Biden was ahead. They wanted to stop the vote, and everybody's like, that doesn't seem like it's a good idea for your side. And then in Phoenix, in Arizona, Biden was also ahead, and they were like, count the vote outside of a center where they're counting the votes, which is like, which is like going, it's a little like going to Dunkin' Donuts and being like, make the donuts, you know? It makes no sense. Like, what are you doing? they're making the donuts, man. You don't need a gun.
We're doing them as fast as we can.
We're making the donuts. Take your AR-15 and go somewhere else.
Have a donut and calm the fuck down.
But listen, here's the thing that I want to bring up that's kind of serious, which is that the media coverage is acting like these are organic, you know, it's a reprise of the Tea Party, where it's very much a top-down Republican operation. There are all these consultants. I forgot who reported it. There was a report, a story about this today. Was it from the Huffington Post? I'm not sure. But there was a story about, you know, all of the Republican operatives with you know, well-funded organizations that were putting these things together. The Trump campaign itself is sending out scads of texts and emails, go down to your ballot processing place. And this is like a desperate fascistic move. And they're just treating it like it's like organic. Like these people are like, oh, let's go down to this place I've never heard of and start shouting for no reason with a pre-printed sign. Like it's.
Well, you're absolutely right. And a huge, huge flag, by the way. You've got to have the biggest flag in the world that you do with these things.
Compensating.
Look, yeah, I'm afraid so. You know, I think the Tea Party thing, I hadn't thought about that, but you're absolutely right. And, you know, in this case, we had the president, and I think the first salvo came out on election night or election day after morning at 2:30. When he came out and said, we have won this election. They're trying to disenfranchise our voters. They're trying to steal the election. And he said this. And of course, everybody, I was up watching it, you know, oh my God, you know, what the president in the White House saying this thing. Apparently that was a speech written by Stephen Miller and Jared Kushner, which just shows you how the A-team thinks in this organization.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the first step in this. And I think we've always worried a little bit about that, not a little bit, a lot about this. And so far what we've seen is it's a bit of a shit show. You know, they came out, they, like you said, they're out there saying, you know, make the donuts in a place where they're making donuts as fast as they can. And it's like, really, you know, why don't you just let them do what you want them to do and shut up? But, you know, so it's been very haphazard. But I'm a little bit more concerned, honestly. I mean, I'm sure they're going to keep doing it. And we're seeing these crowds growing, by the way. They're in Philadelphia, too. And then they've got the other side coming out saying, count every vote now. We've got, you know, different left-wing organizations doing the same thing. So this is going to happen. I think the vote will probably end up being called within the next couple of days.
I think it's going to be called today.
Pennsylvania really looks, you know, looks good.
Georgia,
yeah, it's very, you know, it'll be close. And who knows what kinds of, you know, there'll be recounts and various things that'll go on. Certainly Georgia's almost, you know.
Nevada is very close.
So, but, you know, let's just assume that at that point we're dealing with a situation where it's clear that, you know, that Biden will have won, and it's just a matter of sort of tidying up after that. But what I'm worried about, and I always have been, what happens after that? Because I don't, you know, we talked about the propaganda, the kind of brainwashing really that's gone on among the Trump voters and the people who are living in that particular information silo. They don't expect this. They are not expecting a loss, and they do not believe it can possibly be legitimate. And
that's right.
I don't know, you know, there will be a lot of them who will probably just kind of sit there in shock. I know I will commiserate with how they felt, because I felt that way in 2016.
I'm going to rub it in.
Yeah, I mean, I know, you know, I just know. So you know. When, yeah, that's fine. And I will probably rub it in.
Just FYI, there's no grace here. I've been dealing with these fucking idiots for 4 years. Yeah,
they don't deserve it. That's for sure. Yeah, but, you know, I will understand what that feels like, because I, you know, I was there in 2016 and felt this same sense of shock because I just didn't expect that it could happen. And they're gonna have to feel that. And a lot of them will just be like that. They'll be stunned. But there are a bunch of gun-toting nuts out there who are part of this whole coalition. And there are more of them, I think, than we can feel comfortable with. I mean, we saw what happened in Michigan with that militia. And, of course, Michigan has a long history of that weird stuff.
Yes,
but there's
it does.
A lot of these people around the country that, and, you know, that they are organized online in a way that, that has never happened before.
They've infiltrated law enforcement, too.
Exactly. And
seriously,
so I'm a little concerned about the next 3 months, and particularly since Trump has shown absolutely no regard for trying to tamp down any violence. If anything, he will probably be out
stoking
there egging it on. I think we're in for a kind of a, you know, a nerve-wracking period here. And I don't really know, you know, like you said, law enforcement is not very reliable in this situation. I mean, that's very concerning to me. Those people running through New York, whatever the borough, where they were in Brooklyn or someplace, you know, a week or so ago with the cops saying, you know, vote Trump, vote Trump.
Yeah.
That was weird. And I'm just thinking, what was that? Why would they feel the need to do that? What are they telegraphing here? I mean, I don't know that it was organized. It was maybe just some.
No, it wasn't organized.
Yahoo.
It was just some stupid cops who were. Yeah. I mean, they were suspended for that. But this is the it's not even that I've worried about this. I've taken it as an absolute given that we are going to have at least scattered lone wolf attacks. Right.
Yeah.
And I will say this, though. I don't want to give the Republican establishment even an iota of credit, because these people are anti-democratic bastards, and they're seeing the way the wind blows. But I will say this. It is good for the country that the establishment is not backing his play, and it is good for the country that Fox News, at least during the day, is not backing his play.
Yeah,
this is, you know, I don't want to give them any credit. But it's good for us that this is happening, because it could have gone a different way.
It's essential, really, because otherwise we could be in a total
civil war.
Yeah, a civil war. So, you know, nice of them to go right up to the brink of civil war before they decide, gee, maybe, you know, and it's like on behalf of Donald Trump. I mean, I have to wonder if some of them didn't wake up and go, are we really ready to go this far for this guy?
That's
because, you know, there was no doubt. I mean, you watched Marco Rubio last week standing up there talking about how cute it was that those guys ran the bus off the road in Texas. You know, Marco Rubio, now there's not the guy, you know, he's been trying to kind of play it both ways and have a little bit of an out. None. He gets none. He is a Trumper, as far as I'm concerned. In fact, all of them are. Look, Trump was impeached. They could have gotten rid of him and had Mike Pence on the ballot if they wanted somebody, you know, halfway normal by their standards, not mine, but by their standards. And they chose not to do it. So
right.
I have zero. And in fact, this is really my mission going forward, is to remind people of what the Republican establishment is all about. They saw Donald Trump as an opportunity to get what they wanted, and they put up with whatever he did that they may have felt uncomfortable with, including things like, you know, threatening our alliances around the world and destroying our climate change policies, anything that even they might have thought was radical, in order to get their tax cuts, in order to get their deregulation, in order to maintain power. And they did that, and that's unforgivable what they did, what they allowed to happen over the last 4 years, and they had the power to stop it. They were the only people who had the power to stop it, and they didn't do it. And the absolute carnage that the Donald Trump administration is leaving behind him, the amount of effort it's going to take to try and even, you know, get back to some semblance of normality here in the middle of a pandemic and an economic crisis that is only going to be worse by the time Biden comes in. I mean, they deserve nothing. None of them can say a word to me ever that I will take as being, well, good for you. I mean, I'm pretty open-minded about the Never Trumpers, you know. I mean, they, at least those people, had what it took. You know, they stood up when it actually mattered, when they were putting something at risk. These people, they wait until Trump is gone, you know, like Ben Sasse, you know, 2 weeks before the election, suddenly says, yeah, he's kind of crazy. Yeah, no kidding. Really? Yeah. Thanks, Ben. Really big of you. You know, no profiles and courage there for any of those people, as far as I'm concerned.
Preach, Heather, preach. Ha. And you know, if they had had any, even a modicum of concern for the country and removed him back then, you know, I think Pence is a terrible wingnut, but he's a serious guy and he would have taken the pandemic seriously and he would have approached it very differently. And, I don't know, 100,000 Americans, 150,000 Americans who are dead would be right. alive today. Let's keep that in mind. Heather, I believe we are out of time. I've taken a lot of your time and I appreciate you offering me so much time.
It flew by. It absolutely flew by. I enjoyed it, Joshua. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Heather. And read Heather at Salon and at Hullabaloo. I'd also like to thank Liz Preza and David Edwards, our producer and engineer. You can follow me on Twitter at Joshua Hall. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. I'd like to thank the good folks at Alternet and Raw Story for supporting the show. And of course, I'd like to thank all of you good people for turning out in numbers and beating Donald Trump. Have a terrific week.